I'm going to nibble on a little piece of deer penis.
Yes, okay.
That's really good.
Okay.
That's really good.
The food keeps coming. There's that once poisonous black nut again, and the nuts blend so well with the chicken and shrimp paste, there are lots of ways to eat it.
You can sort of smear it anywhere. Yeah. It's almost like a pate from nuts.
Hey, kids. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. You know, spring's around the corner, so I thought it would be a good idea to do a show focusing on health and fitness. Eating right, taking care of yourself. Because, you know, spring's coming around here, and we start planting our gardens. We get lots of greenery. Things are defrosting. It's getting a little bit warmer. We can exercise. And it's time for everybody to kind of get off their lazy asses and start exercising. Start living right. You know, we've been in hibernation all this time. I already figured that was a good idea and what I wanted to do. Then something happened, and I didn't expect it. Katrina and I had been planning for a while to donate blood. It was on our calendar. There was something we had on our schedule for a long time. And it's giving blood. You know what? I didn't really have any thoughts about it, really. It's just a date on our planner. It's nothing major. So we get to the hospital. This is a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, as usual, you know, they do the screener. They make sure you're okay to give blood. Katrina goes first. She's a veteran. She's been giving blood all her life. Platelets, the whole thing. Apheresis. So she's in there for a little bit. She comes out. They get her to a bed. She starts giving blood. I go in, and she takes my blood pressure. And guess what? It was high. It was really high, actually. She goes, man, this is high. So she goes, oh, we'll take it again in a little bit. Maybe you've got, like, white coat syndrome. Maybe you're nervous. Thank God I'm not nervous. I mean, I've been in operations and stuff. I'm not nervous. So she takes it again, and it's, like, higher than before. She goes, man, have you had readings like this before? And I said, no. I mean, back in September, I had this oral surgery thing, and they took my blood pressure then, and I was okay. I didn't have an issue. So she goes, listen, if, you know, your blood pressure this high, I can't really take your blood. You know, you'll end up getting headaches and get dizzy and stuff. And she goes, you know, with blood pressure like this, you should have a headache. She goes, don't you have a headache? And I go, no, but I do now, motherfucker. You know, this is bullshit. Take it again. So they make me rest for like 10 minutes, and then I come back, and she takes it again, and it's brutal. So she goes, no, we rejected. We can't take your blood today, and you should see a doctor. So I'm freaking out here, right? Because, you listen, you guys, I'm good. I talk about cooking with butter and cream and eating rich French food here all the time. But you should know that that usually is reserved for the weekends, and really not often then. I eat really healthy. We eat a lot of vegetables, protein, very lean things. We don't overdo it. You know, we don't go out that often, and when we do, you normally hear about it on the show because it's a special occasion. So I don't screw around. I eat right. I might have In-N-Out Burger now and then, tempura once in a while, and I'm talking once in a great while. A bowl of pho is probably the most unhealthy thing that I eat on a regular basis. You know, once a week, maybe 2-3 times a month is about the tops for me. Not exactly low in sodium, okay, but I eat right. I exercise, I run, I lift, I ride, I keep up. How in the hell can I have high blood pressure? Well, after a complete physical, blood test, the whole ball of wax, it comes down to my family history. I have high blood pressure, and, you know, if you're in my family and you're over 40, your genes just kind of kick in and say, look, you've got high blood pressure now. So 44 years old, 6'3", 200 pounds, no real apparent health issues. But the silent killer, as they call it, is here. And now I've got to take medication to keep it down, at least for now. Had I not attempted to give blood, though, I wouldn't have known. And if it can happen like that for me, it can happen like that for anybody. And it brings to light how incredibly important it is for all of us to visit our doctor, to get checked out. Make sure you're cool. I don't care how healthy you think you are, how well you live your life. You know, you've got to take care of yourself. And if you've got a problem, get on it. You're young enough, you can bounce right back. And on a show on health and fitness, it couldn't have possibly have been more important to do this than now. I'm happy to tell you, thanks to Bobby Bogner, host of Food Tech on the History Channel on Thursdays. You guys all know him. He's a guy who's been more gracious than I ever could have possibly asked for. He hooked me up. We'll be joined a little later by Nathan Lyon, host of A Lion in the Kitchen. It's a show on, he's got a show on PBS coming up in May called Growing a Greener World. And his show, A Lion in the Kitchen's currently on Fit TV and Discovery Health. Amazing show. He's all about health and fitness, working the farmers markets for your food, cooking with vegetables. His show on Discovery and Fit is fantastic. It's a show that reminds me of the types of food shows that made Food Network great. He was runner-up to Guy Fieri on the Next Food Network Star, maybe the most memorable of all seasons of that show. But it's funny, too, because here's Guy Fieri. Now, he's doing a show on diners and greasy spoons. Totally unhealthy bullshit. And Nathan is doing a show on eating right, cooking with vegetables, visiting your farmers markets, talking to your farmers, balancing your life, and not eating fast food. So Bobby has lunch with him, mentions my show of all things, because he'd just done the interview with me, calls me and says, you should contact Nathan. And so here we are. So I had a pre-interview with him last night, and dude, I'm telling you something. He was out of the gate with issues right away, talking about farmers' markets, how farmers are underappreciated, how it's his personal goal to give up a lot of things in his life to be an advocate for eating right and staying healthy. And I was beside myself. It was like listening to my show over the phone from someone who actually knew what the hell they were talking about. He went to Cordon Bleu, worked under a chef who was named one of Food & Wine's best new chefs of 1999. He's on a first-name basis with some really major chefs, major Food Network people like Bobby Flay, Alton Brown. When we hung up, I looked at the timer on my phone. Like 45 minutes had just flown by. Why the hell didn't it record that? I don't know. That could have been a perfect interview. I'd have been done. But if you're listening to the show at home or maybe at work, visit ChefNathanLyon.com while you listen to the interview. And you'll begin to understand what true food passion is. He comes right out of the vegetable box and bites you right in the ass. So we'll look forward to talking to him a little bit later. Before I continue, I'm going to say something here. We need more people like Bobby Bogner on the planet. I'm not ass-kissing here. I'm just saying Bobby has a simple lunch with Nathan, thinks he might be a good guest for my show, and hooks me up. He didn't owe me anything, but he did that for me. He was just a really good dude, man. He gets me, he gets the show, and he wants to give back when he doesn't really have to. He's just an incredible person. If his show doesn't get renewed, I'll freaking die, okay? Because nobody deserves success more than him right now. His show just gets better with each episode. If you missed last week's episode, catch it on replay. It was about breakfast. They showed how bacon was made in mass production, in these, you know, mass-produced places. Then he jerked off a pig. Incredible. Food Tech Thursday's History Channel. Okay, so I've made it a goal to get back to running and working out 5 times a week. I set a goal with Nike Plus, burn some calories, just, you know, I needed a goal. Not that I'm fat, but I just needed a goal. If you have an iPhone, you're already halfway there, okay? You just need to buy the transmitter pod. You stick it in your shoe. It doesn't have to be a Nike shoe, but it would help. And then you can use it to start tracking your walks or runs and actually see progress on NikePlus.com. Doesn't cost you anything other than, you know, the cost of the little transmitter. And it's fun. It's fun to keep track. Otherwise, you're just running and you're not really seeing anything. It's fun to see results on paper, at least, on the screen. Even the newer Nanos have these built-in pedometers, so you can track your steps as you walk, listen to podcasts or music. There's no reason not to get out there. 30 minutes a day is all you need. And don't tell me you don't have time, okay? Find time. It's your health. Okay, it's about you. It's important. You have kids? Fine. Take them on a 30-minute walk every day, before or after dinner. It doesn't matter. You don't have to bring your iPod. You can talk to each other, have little contests, set goals, see who can get to a certain landmark first. Just watch for cars. Just find a safe place to walk. It's good for the family. It's good for you. But seeing that the show is about health and fitness, all right, I figured it probably wasn't a good idea to feature a beer on the show. But then I thought about it, and it still wasn't a good idea. So we're going to skip the beer this week, if you don't mind. I do want to get the show started off, on the right foot, considering what we're going to be talking about. I want you to listen to this audio courtesy of CNN. It's another propaganda piece that we see and hear constantly about how unsafe it is to eat so-called safe foods, foods that are good for you, like spinach, lettuce, tomatoes, all types of fruits and vegetables. And I want you to listen to this objectively. I ask you this, are these smear pieces designed to make fresh food evil? Is that what they're doing here? I want to know. Are they designed to force people into the inside aisles of the grocery store to eat prepackaged meals, you know, frozen vegetables, maybe canned vegetables? That wouldn't be so bad, but maybe more of the processed variety of foods. I ask if they're trying to get you to stay away from the produce section. That's the most important question, because that's what it sounds like to me every time I hear stuff like this. Are farmers out to kill you? Is a company like ConAgra maybe behind propaganda pieces like this? I never see a recall on Tyson chicken. I don't see recalls on any fast food chains anymore, but you see them all the time on foods that are supposed to be good for you all the time. Maybe we're supposed to change our minds and stop eating whole foods. I don't know. I want to know what their point is to playing this stuff. And before I play this, you can actually play a drinking game here with the clip. Every time the guy says, "Oh my goodness, have a drink," all right, you'll be smashed by the time Nathan comes on.
It was September 2006. You had fed your daughters, Isabella and Ashley, some spinach. Isabella got sick, had diarrhea for a few days, but she got better. Then Ashley got gravely ill. What happened?
excuse me. The E. coli turned into hemolytic uremic syndrome, which essentially shut down her kidneys, caused massive brain swelling, pancreatitis, and we almost lost her. She needed dialysis to stay alive.
Oh, my goodness. Ashley, I know that you were very, very young when all of this happened. Do you remember any of it?
When I almost died, the spinach, well, I really liked it, but when we bought it, we didn't know that it would almost make me die.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, so many people didn't know when they bought it, and then they found out later. Oh, my goodness. Eric, let's talk to you about the study, because it is rather stunning. When we take a look at what we knew in the past, or thought we knew, versus what we know now, it's completely different. 1997, the U.S. Department of Agriculture figured that foodborne illnesses cost this country $35 billion a year. Your study found out that that figure is actually $152 billion, a cost of $1,851 per illness. Were you surprised by that?
Well, it was actually the study was done by an economist that used to work for the Food and Drug Administration, mm-hmm. and he used Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, data. We were very surprised when he came back with these numbers, and the reason that the numbers are so much higher than previous estimates is that he looked at the full array of all the foodborne illnesses. All the previous studies just looked at a few specific illnesses, and he also looked at the whole wide array of costs, ranging from things like medical costs, out-of-pocket expenses, as well as lost work and so on.
Oh, my goodness. You know, and Elizabeth, when we talk about the effects of foodborne illnesses in terms of, you know, overall health care and cost, you think, okay, so you get sick for a little while, it costs a certain amount of money. But when it comes to Ashley, the expenses were tremendous at first, and they will continue on for decades for you.
That's correct. The 6 weeks in the hospital was extremely expensive, but it's the multiple kidney transplants that we have to look forward to that'll really be very, very costly.
Has she had any kidney transplants at this point?
Not yet.
Right.
Not yet.
She's nodding yes. You're saying no. There's a little bit of a disagreement in the family. When will she have to undergo a kidney transplant?
They estimated it'll be between 3 and 10 years, and we're at 3 years now. So we're very fortunate that we haven't needed one yet.
Wow. Ashley, do you have any idea what you're going to have to go through for the rest of your life? I know that your mom and your dad are going to be there loving you and supporting you and taking care of you, but, you know, what are you thinking about all of this?
Well, I'm thinking about...
Just one day at a time, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good way to take life one day at a time. Eric, you know, the Food and Drug Administration says foodborne illness is on the rise. What's broken here? Why is there so much?
Well, the system is completely broken at this point. What we have is a law that is over 70 years old and hasn't been updated in many decades. We've got legislation that would update it that has broad bipartisan support. It's already passed the House, but it's bottled up in the Senate. And really, it's clear from this report that families like Ashley's family are taking huge economic hits, as well as just the enormous toll on the family of having this kind of illness. We really need the system to be modernized. We need the law to be modernized. Yeah. And the Senate could do it really pretty quickly if they got around to it.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to that in just a second. Elizabeth, just in terms of the kind of effect that this has had on your family, can you tell us a little bit more about that? And what changes do you want to see made?
Well, our lives are quite a bit different now. She's on five different medications. Her diet's extremely limited, and so that kind of changes the diet of the whole family. The countless doctor's visits and lab work that we do is pretty expensive. So we just wanted to come here and talk to the Senate and just beg them essentially to pass this food safety legislation.
So you're happy with all of the changes that are in the FDA food safety modernization bill?
I think it's an excellent start. Right. I think it would help to make Americans safer.
And Eric, we talk about the fact that there's no bipartisanship on Capitol Hill. Congress is broken. This is a bill that passed the House. It got unanimous support in a Senate committee, and it's caught up in a logjam. What does that say about the state that government is in if you can't even pass a bill that's got broad bipartisan support?
Well, all Americans can get sick from foodborne illness, so this has not been a partisan issue at all. We've had, obviously Republicans and Democrats get sick from contaminated food. Excuse me. So it's clear that this is something where there's no need for scrapping between different groups. And we've had really strong support from some of the most conservative members of the Senate and some of the most progressive members of the Senate. So we're optimistic that this will move. It just needs to be made a priority by the leadership in the Senate.
Hey, people are getting E. coli from vegetables, okay? I'm not doubting the validity of that. But whose vegetables are they getting sick on exactly? In the years I've been eating farm-fresh produce, I've never gotten ill. No one I know who eats food purchased at farmers' markets has gotten ill. And I wonder if the farmers had more money to line CNN's pockets if they would be getting more upbeat feature stories and less stories like this. Gotta wonder.
Hi, and welcome to A Lion in the Kitchen. I'm Nathan Lyon, and I am convinced that great food starts fresh. Mother Nature, she provides us with an incredible abundance of food, most of which can be found at your local grocery store, which is great. But to truly find out how to pick out the best produce, you need to go straight to the source and talk to the farmer at your local farmer's market. Americans eat approximately 3.5 times the amount of sodium that they're supposed to be eating. And about 80% of that sodium comes from fast food, processed food, and even some restaurants are to blame. So when you eat at home and cook at home for your family, you can control that sodium that'll lead to certain health problems that we don't want to have.
Well, he speaks my kind of language, a big proponent of farmers and farmers markets. He's the host of A Lion in the Kitchen on Discovery Health Channel, as well as Fit TV, and a new show, Growing a Greener World, debuting May 18th on PBS. He's Nathan Lyon, and he joins us now. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for having me, brother.
No, thanks for coming on, man. Listen, Nathan, before we begin, I have to tell you, I have had some pre-interviews on this show before, but yours carved new ground, man. You were on fire.
It wasn't just the espresso that I had surging through my system. It's something that I really believe in, and it's something that I would say more than passionate about. Given the climate of health that's going through the government right now, people understanding they truly are what they eat. And once you get me going, it's really hard to stop. And like I told you last night, if I go off on too many tangents, Phil, you got the reins, brother. Like, hold me back.
Listen, for now, you've got the reins, man. For the next half hour or however long we're talking, it's your show, man. Just take it. Your show, A Lion in the Kitchen, can still be seen on Discovery Health in addition to Fit TV. I saw a couple episodes of your show, and I'm telling you, Food Network, they missed the boat with you.
Well, I mean, thank you, first and foremost. The interesting thing about my show on Discovery Health and Fit TV is that when I first spoke with Discovery Health, and they were like, we're doing this healthy cooking show. Are you interested? And I, of course, flipped out, as any normal person would do, and I sent them some DVDs I'd cut on my own I'd gone up to a bunch of my farmer friends' farms and then talked with them about how to pick up the freshest ingredients. And this is a great number of years ago. And then I sent that information to Discovery Health. We had the initial interview, and that was that. They called me on a Monday when I was eating lunch, and I got the job. The thing about Food Network, and, you know, again, this is a number of years ago before sustainable and fresh and green and organic became very popularized, which it should be, thank goodness. And I went back and I pitched a very similar idea to them, and they liked the idea. They just said it was too educational. Which kind of makes sense back in the day because they were all about entertainment. And there's a food element to it, but entertainment is very important in this country. I used to watch Food Network a great deal of time, but that's when I was growing up, when people like Ming Tsai would teach me how to cook because I wanted to learn how to cook. And so, you know, when I was at Food Network and they said it was too educational, I was like, cool, no problem. You know, when I was on Next Food Network Star, I just realized that I'm a teacher, and I didn't really come to that realization until after I was on that show. And I'm just thankful that Discovery Health and Fit TV picked me up because it's really everything I've always wanted to do.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Ming Tsai because your show is so reminiscent of shows like Simply Ming and the original Essence of Emerald. These are shows that hooked us on Food Network to begin with because they taught us things that we didn't know. They taught us how to cook. And, you know, you've got a great set, a great crew, the lighting and photography is great, and you're so comfortable in front of the camera.
Well, thanks. The thing about being comfortable in front of the camera, like I've done, this is back in college and a little bit out here in Los Angeles, I've done theater only because I'm the youngest of three boys and I love attention. I'm old enough. I'm a grown-ass man, Phil. I can say that. It's like there's something about having knowledge, and it's going way back to when I was a kid, and like knowledge is power, conjunction, putting some, you know, all these amazing things to music so the kids can learn. And there's something about the medium of television, which I just was so attracted to when I was first on TV, and that was on Food Network Star. Yeah, with Ming, there's something so great about being able to connect to the camera. And when I look in the camera, I'm talking, I could be talking to you, I could be talking to my two brothers, to anybody who's just kind of sitting there, you know, who really wants to learn. And the amount of information that I've accrued working really intimately with farmers in LA farmers markets for over a decade is a lot. And so it's kind of strange. I swear to God, I probably breathe through my pores, and it's just one long sentence for hours on end. I don't even have to inhale. I just keep on talking. And it's unfortunate that the TV shows that I'm on are only half an hour long, because after commercials, it's like 21 minutes, you know, and that's not a lot of time in order to cook three to four things after I go to the farm and learn, you know, with America from the farmer how to pick out, how to store, how to ultimately cook some of the freshest seasonal ingredients out there.
So this new show, Growing a Greener World, how is this different from A Lion in the Kitchen?
Well, Growing a Greener World, I am one of three hosts. I'm a host and, of course, the chef of this show. And the two other hosts is Joe Lample. He has a show on PBS and also on Do It Yourself Network. And also a woman by the name of Patty Moreno. And Patty Moreno has a lot of clout on the Internet. She does a lot of shows on the Internet. And together, you know, they do more than I do, but they kind of travel around the U.S. and they talk about gardening, to be honest with you. Joe is a master gardener, and Patty is, she's known as the garden girl on the Internet. And they go around and they talk about different types of things that communities are doing to kind of help themselves out, to help the movement, to help Mother Earth, if you will. So they'll go into, let's say, downtown Philly, you know, more of a lower income housing, and they'll take a block and discover what can be done with it. And some of the things that have been done across this country are really admirable, and they're very exciting, to where you can just put in new soil, start growing crops, throw in a CSA, which is community supported agriculture, so that people that normally don't have access to the freshest ingredients, now they can, and they can pay with food stamps, they can pay with money, and they can also participate like a co-op in order to, you know, to really allow their families to get healthier firsthand. Or they'll go to a larger city and talk about rooftop gardening, because you've got all these massive buildings with so much square footage on the roofs where nothing's occurring, and you can actually grow a lot of cool stuff up there. you know, gardening and food, going back to the you are what you eat sort of scenario. And then, you know, I come in because people that even garden at home will say, all right, I've got this huge basket of bok choy. What the heck do I do with it? And, of course, that's when I come in, and I'm like, well, I'll teach you a couple different ways to make it. And that's my role in the TV show.
Wow. Yeah, man, you know what? That show sounds awesome. Now, this is going to be a one-hour show, right?
No, it's a half-hour show.
Okay, so it's a half an hour or so. So that means you have one-third the amount of time you've had on these other shows?
Well, I mean, the strange thing is I've never done anything with PBS. And PBS, the reason why I love it so much is because, first and foremost, you know, you don't have to have cable. You can just have a TV and get it. So there's far more exposure. And when you have a television show like this one, which is a big educational show, then you reach a larger audience, you know. The different networks I've been on, you know, be it TLC or Food Network or what have you, they want you to use certain brands because they have certain sponsors.
Sure.
And some occasions I refused. I'm like, I can make chocolate pudding, but I'm not going to make it out of a box. I'm going to make it with real chocolate and some cornstarch, just like my grandmother did.
Man, I was only laughing because you said, you know, you don't know how you can stuff everything you have to say into 30 minutes, and now you've got like 10.
It's actually less than that. It's funny because... But there are no commercials, you know. On Line in the Kitchen, it's, what did I say, it's maybe like 17 and a half minutes of actual cooking time in the kitchen, because you have to take three and a half minutes to go out into the field with a farmer and learn some stuff, or out in the boat, or in a BAB area, or whatever I'm doing that particular episode. But I'm used to, you know, ripping through the shows. I have a lot to say, but also beforehand, mentally, I kind of choreograph what I'm trying to accomplish, because... What I found is if I go and speak to a group of people and I blitzkrieg them with 500 different things, it's actually less helpful because there's so much information. But if I figure out what people kind of are looking for by, you know, questioning them, speaking to them before I go up there and speak and cook, then I'll have, say, 10 things. And if they leave with 7, well, then my job is done. I'm pretty happy about that.
Right. Will you continue to produce more episodes of A Lion in the Kitchen, or is that all over?
Unfortunately, that's probably all over with, because Oprah went in and purchased the content rights to Discovery Health. And sometime next year, probably the third quarter of next year, she's going to launch a network called OWN, O-W-N, the Oprah Winfrey Network. And I already spoke with OWN, and I don't believe they'll be doing any cooking shows. You know, but she might change her mind. You just never know what's going to happen. But my show will continue to do reruns. Which is great. I did practically 3 seasons of A Lion in the Kitchen, and that's about 18 episodes per season. And they'll keep running those. And one funny thing is, Phil, when I shoot those shows, I rip out an entire season, 18 episodes, in 9 days straight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I shoot 2 shows a day.
Man, you're working harder than Bogner.
Listen, that guy put on some miles. Listen, that guy's fantastic. He's a natural when it comes to that sort of thing. And it's really fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But the more information I can get out there, the better it's going to be. And when I have, you know, these opportunities to be involved with really cool people and cool stations like PBS, Discovery Health, TLC, Fit TV, you know, educational-type programming, it's a really good fit. And when it's a good fit, I don't have to pretend to be anybody I'm not. You know, they just ask me to be myself, bring my knowledge, and then everything falls into place, which is so brilliant.
Yeah, what's really cool about your show, I've noticed that the focus is mainly on vegetables, with the protein almost being kind of like a side dish every time. Definitely well-balanced, and the way we should all, you know, approach our meals. What ignited your passion for produce so much?
Well, I mean, initially, the first ignition, if you will, is what I was saying. I'm the youngest of 3 boys, and back in Arlington, Virginia is where I grew up, and my grandparents, paternal grandparents, lived 4 houses down. And so, you know, we were latchkey kids, and I would get back, and either, you know, my brothers are big dudes, I'll start by saying that. They're big, big guys. And 2-year difference of boys as they're growing up is supremacy, really, if you think about it. So I would go to my grandparents' house and help, you know, my grandfather garden and help my grandmother cook and can and all these things. That's kind of where it started when I first got my hands into the dirt. And when I came out here to Los Angeles, I met this one farmer. His name is Ken Lee with Ken's Top Notch Produce. He's out of South Fresno, Reedley, California. here. And I started working for him. And there's something to be said for ingredients that were picked the day before.
Oh, yeah.
So fresh. And when you go directly from the person, the farmer, to the farmer's market, you can actually afford, as a farmer, to keep things on the tree to the very last second. Because you know the flavor is going to be so amazing. And that's exactly what happened. So I started working for him, and then I started realizing what I had been missing, you know, through college when I'm really busy and I shop at grocery stores. I lived in Vail, Colorado. You know, I would support the farmers markets there. In Vail, Colorado, Phil, it's 8,600 feet, and there are farmers markets for 3 months out of the year. I'm shopping, you know, at Safeway. But even in grocery stores, that's one of the things I say to America, which is, you know, there's a thing called perimeter shopping. And if you and I walk into any grocery store across the country, and we walk in, immediately on your right-hand side are all the fresh vegetables, produce, fruits and vegetables. And you keep going around counterclockwise. And you'll see, like, cheese and yogurt and eggs, and there's the fish guy, and there's the meat section, and there's the bread, and you're done.
Right. I tell everybody on the show, I say it all the time, to shop the outside aisles. Stay out of the inside aisles unless you need things like diapers or soap, but everything you need can be found on the outside aisles.
Yeah, pretty much, absolutely. And the thing about fresh produce and shopping at farmers markets, it's first and foremost, like if I'm back in D.C., you know, I'm going to shop at farmers markets because it's like if you go to downtown L.A., you know, you see all these big-ass buildings, or you go to Seattle, you see these beautiful buildings, and society will never be up in arms and say, you know what, let's tear down beautiful buildings. Let's build a farm. Let's grow herbs. And that will never happen. And because that sort of thing never happens, I think it's really important to support the farmer because farmers aren't getting rich. Let me tell you, you know, they're not getting rich off of this. But in a weird way, they are preserving earth that isn't a strip mall. Like, they must be preserved. And, you know, people keep selling off land in order to build condos and strip malls and stuff like that. And I understand that there's something really important to be said about growth, and I'm not against that, but it's like, you know, it's important that our kids and our society have places to go to and really clean, fresh soil in order to grow food, because if you think that something really amazing is going to come out of the ground when you shove a bunch of pesticides and herbicides and fungicides in that soil and you're expecting something healthy to come of it, you're grossly mistaken. But when you go to the farmer, and the farmer's like, I planted this with my own hands, or, you know, these peaches took 3 years before I could bring them to market. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of time. And so paying $2.50 for a pound of really delicious peaches is pretty awesome. In the middle of winter, if you're dying for a peach cobbler, get frozen peaches. You know, but if you're buying peaches in the middle of winter and you think they're fresh, they come from the south of South America, again, it's like you shouldn't be eating that stuff in the middle of wintertime because your body doesn't want it. If it's freezing cold and I'm like, let's make ice cream and tomato sorbet and chilled gazpacho, you look at me like I'm crazy. But if I said, when it's 30 degrees and snowing outside, what if I made you a mushroom risotto, you know, with like a warm, creamy soup with braised lamb shank with, and then you're like, yeah, okay. And you can shake your head up and down. You're like, yeah, that does sound better. It sounds kind of unctuous and warm and fuzzy and cuddly. Because that's what you're supposed to eat, because Mother Nature puts that stuff in front of you. Potatoes, sweet potatoes, you know, apples, Brussels sprouts and cabbage, all these things are braising. You know, they're warm, they're unctuous, they're just so delicious. And so all you have to do is just take a step outside, if you have a farmer's market, whenever it may be, and just pay attention to what Mother Nature puts in front of you. Because more times than not, all of those different types of produce, they all work together harmoniously.
Listen, Nathan, you're making full sense here. But I have to say this, anybody who says in the middle of winter that they want peach cobbler, and then you say, how about I make you mushroom risotto? They'll say, hey, that sounds great. Can you make it taste like peach cobbler?
Well, what I'm saying is, if you want peach cobbler, I mean, listen, I have cravings as well, even if it's in the middle of winter, but there's nothing wrong with frozen.
Right. And what I'm saying to you is that Americans are spoiled. If they want peach cobbler in the middle of winter, they're going to have peach cobbler because they're all about instant gratification. You make perfect sense here, and you're the perfect guest for my show. My question to you is, as advocates of farmers markets, CSAs, eating healthy meals at home, as opposed to taking part in Taco Tuesday, What more do you think we can do to get the word out to others that there is a cheaper, healthier alternative for everybody? What bigger stance can we take?
Well, I mean, in a weird way, there's such a paradigm shift going on right now in America, which I think is amazing, and I applaud everyone who's participating in that. But I think America is changing from the inside out, because America, let's face it, we're a very sick country. You know, when our kids in America are type 2 adult onset diabetes when they're 10 or 11 years old, and type 2 diabetes is pretty much 95% to 100% what you eat. End of story. You know, and if you have a sedentary lifestyle and you're eating fast food and you're sucking down sodas like crazy and high fructose corn syrup, you know, you're going to get your body's not going to work that well. So change is occurring out of necessity. I don't think out of desire. And I think a lot of programming is starting to really pay attention. For example, going back to Food Network, if you look at their program, they do have programs now that talk about farm fresh produce, whereas 5 years ago they didn't. So people must take responsibility for these sorts of things. Just the other day, I was driving down near Silver Lake here in Los Angeles, and I saw a poster, a little advertisement for Coca-Cola. And they have these 7-ounce containers now, which I think is pretty responsible on their part, just because of public outcry. Because, you know, sodas are not getting the best...
PR?
Yeah, they're not getting the best exposure right now. And they shouldn't, really. But if they come out with a 7-ounce container, psychologically what that does is that makes it individuals more responsible for having to open a second can or a second serving or a third or fourth or fifth or sixth can. And psychologically, people will actually drink less soda if they have to keep opening up a new can, because every time they open up a can, they have to make the conscious decision, do I want to open this up? As opposed to going to, you know, a convenience store and getting a super big gulp, which is like, what is it, like 120 ounces of ridiculousness.
Yeah, it's like a half gallon, right?
Pretty much, and that is one serving to most people, because it's one container. And so, you know, even Coca-Cola is coming around, and I think that's because of public outcry. People are really mad. People are really effing pissed off, and they have a right to be, because America's dying slowly, and you and I are paying for it. I mean, we're all paying for it. But this is the first generation where our kids will be dying before our parents, only because of health issues. You can't have high blood pressure, you can't have heart disease, and you can't have diabetes, you know, at this young age. You're barely even a teenager.
Yeah.
So what happened? You know, what is happening here? And the most basic things need to change as well. One of the things I always like to say, Phil, is that we're all products of our environment. You know, it just so happens in my environment, I was a latchkey kid, we couldn't afford to go out to eat, so we ate co-op stuff, and we cooked at home. And it just so happens that was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, by hindsight.
Right.
And what ends up happening is that people also don't have the information they need to have. I can't say to people, well, you're a grown-ass man, you should know this, because no one's ever told people certain things. And so what I do on my show is I'll say, listen, you need to stop drinking apple juice. There's no nutritional value to apple juice whatsoever, and people always think it's healthy. I'm like, how about this? Just eat the apple. The apple has fiber in it, and that actually is an appetite suppressant, so you eat less. It takes 5 apples to make 1 glass of apple juice. I mean, good luck sitting down and eating 5 apples and saying you're still hungry.
That's a really good point, and what a great rebuttal, too.
Well, I mean, it's like, for my cookbook, I was thinking, what is a double bacon cheeseburger? Well, like, it's 55 grams of fat, 980 calories. And I thought, well, if I could compare unprocessed food to that, what would that be? And the answer is ridiculous. It's like 2 heads of broccoli, 5 chicken breasts, 28 cups of spinach, and I think like 7 apples.
Good Lord.
If you're still hungry after that, I don't know what to tell you.
Got a hollow leg.
Pretty much. Even eating just 28 cups of spinach, and there's no sodium, there's no fat, there's barely any calories. And so you kind of have to change your habit. People are in the habit of waking up, drinking their coffee, eating whatever they eat. They sit in traffic. They sit at the office. They eat fast food. They sit in traffic on the way home. They sit in front of the TV and watch TV and eat their dinner. And they go to bed. That is a sedentary lifestyle. So it's not just the food that is the problem. It's like you need to get off your butt and actually do something, like move at all. So when I speak to people, I'll say, how about this? taking the escalator to work, when you get at work, every single day, how about you take the stairs one day out of 5 days? And that seems reasonable to me.
Sure.
Instead of watching TV over the weekend or every night, why don't you put some soup on, and then while the soup is cooking, why don't you take your kids and go for a walk? There's a reason why Olympians aren't fat. The reason why cyclists aren't fat, they need to burn like 8,000 calories a day. They eat like horses, and they're still not fat. And so if you look at that sort of thing, it's like the exercise is definitely part of the solution. So not only, should you not be eating a lot of processed food, because processed food, in my honest opinion, isn't really food. Because real food should rot. It shouldn't last on your cupboard for 12 to 15 years with a flavor packet. It just shouldn't be that, because that's not the way Mother Nature intended. So the way that I eat is the way that my great-grandmother ate. I don't eat anything that my great-grandmother didn't eat.
Do you think there's hope for us as a nation of overweight, unhealthy people? Do you think we'll ever get it, or will we just continue to eat poorly, get fatter, and die younger?
Well, there's this massive movement going on right now to where farmers markets are super, super popular. When I first moved to L.A. 13 years ago, the popular thing was what club you go to. Like, where do you go after work or during the weekends? What's the club? And now it's like, where do you get your beets from?
Hey, dude, what city are you living in?
Swear to God, brother. It's like, it's very, very popular, and which is fantastic. And there's certain movements going on where people are gardening at home because they find it saves them money. You know, people, instead of throwing out those vegetables that look really bad and they're flaccid and nasty, there's still a lot of flavor left in that. You know, and people make their homemade stock instead of spending up to $4.25 for a container of stock.
Right.
It's like, you've already paid for that stuff. Why would you throw it away? And I think what you were discussing earlier is that, you know, we as Americans are spoiled. There's a certain sense of entitlement that needs to change. And if there's one good thing, and believe me, I don't really care much for it, but there's one good thing that's coming out of this recession, is that everyone is affected. Every single person is affected.
I ran this report earlier, and I wanted to get your take on it. What is your take on these reports that we see all of the time on foodborne illnesses, children getting sick by eating fresh vegetables like spinach, and the finger-pointing that goes on at our farmers? Do you think FDA reform is the answer, or do you see banning importation of produce from other countries as the answer to these problems? What do you think is the answer to these problems?
Well, I mean, the thing about the government is that, you know, the bipartisanship is kind of silly. The thing about, let me throw a little analogy out there. It's like when people get sick because of spinach, it's not necessarily because of the farmer. Farmers markets, I think, are kind of, I don't want to say real farmers, but I do think that just because I work so intimately with them.
I agree with that.
The thing about the farms where people get sick, those are thousands of acres. Those are super duper massive farms. And the analogy I'm trying to draw is, if you have a teacher, let's say a kindergarten teacher who has 15 to 20 students, she's going to know when one of her students are a little bit ill. She just knows because she knows her students. Same with a farmer who has, say, 200 chickens or 300 chickens, as opposed to 650,000 chickens. You know, and that's why it's like, if the teacher sees that one student is sick, she'll go in there and be like, let's get this one child out who has pink eye or lice and take care of it. And that's why it's very difficult to control 100,000 acres of spinach, you know, when the runoff is happening because the 100,000 head of steer are right next door to E. coli. So, you know, when I go to farmers markets and I buy chickens, I know the source where they're coming from. I don't have to have a whole chicken. I don't have to have a 60-pound steak or a 60-ounce steak. It's just not necessary. So when it comes to reform, reform's going to have to happen from the inside out. You know, it just has to. It's the same thing as smoking. I remember it was very difficult for this country to embrace the fact that we need to stop smoking as a nation because it's kind of not good for us. And then it was somewhat of a revolution because when people's grandfathers and fathers and brothers and sisters are dying because of lung cancer, people get mad. But it's always after the fact. And now people are dying because of what they eat. And now people are taking action. It's never too late. But sometimes change can be tremendous, and mostly when it's in a country this size. And, you know, certain foods like corn and soybean are being subsidized and making it super-duper inexpensive to use in everything that we eat. That's hard to kind of get my head around. That's why I don't eat anything that's processed. I mean, the only stuff that I eat that's out of a box is, like, pasta, you know, because I know what's in that. I'll buy cans of tomatoes because I know tomatoes are in a tomato, frozen vegetables, and that's essentially it. You know, because as we were discussing yesterday in one of my shows, I was saying, you know, it's about 80 to 85% of all the sodium intake that you have is because of restaurants and fast food. And let's say that I eat at home every night. How much sodium do I have? Well, it depends how much sodium I put in my food.
Yeah, because you're controlling it.
Yeah, you're controlling it. And so, you know, when I look around and I remember being in elementary school, there was only one heavy kid in my entire elementary school. And I won't even mention his name. He may be listening.
But I mean, that.
You know, one kid. You look around now and the status quo is not actually being in shape. You know, it's kind of this sloth-like, lethargic attitude. And I'm not sure what the answer is, but I know that if I can convert one little person at a time, or even just one person, then I'm kind of helping the cause. And I really want people to eat, you know, seasonally. Because if you eat seasonally, you'll be fine. Like, you're not going to get ill from my cooking. You're just not. If I use olive oil, it's good for your heart. You know, even if I use butter and cream, which I rarely do, it's still not bad for you because your body knows how to metabolize that stuff. I mean, if you recall back when people were really pushing Olean or Olestra, that was supposed to come from like a natural, I'm using air quotes here, Phil.
Right.
From like a natural source of soybeans. You know what? It gives you bloody stools. It makes you poop blood, for God's sakes. That's not natural. And it's like, listen, mercury is natural. Lead and cyanide, those are natural. I don't want to eat that stuff. So natural is such a bastardized word, and I'm afraid that words like organic are going to go that same way because people can make money off.
Oh, they had to do that to pork last year because they said we had to put the quotes around the word natural because the word natural had become so bastardized, they didn't even know what natural meant anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, anything that you can sell is in danger. That's kind of how I feel, and that's why you haven't seen me on a commercial. That's why I don't own a house. I still don't own my education, for goodness sakes, is because you'll never see a television commercial saying, go to your farmer's market. You just don't. What you do instead see are commercials for these really flashy, bright boxes of something saying 50% less fat. I'm here to tell you, Phil, if it has less fat, that means it has a higher amount of sugar and a higher amount of sodium.
Right.
It just does. That's the trilogy. That's the three things that that used to be very difficult to get thousands of years ago, and now we have it in everything. It's fat, sugar, and sodium.
You mentioned olive oil, man. I watch your show. You pour olive oil on everything. Do you have a favorite olive oil?
I mean, my favorite olive oil, to be honest with you, is Lucini. It's L-U-C-I-N-I, Lucini Italia. I really like the flavor of that. But if I'm going to rip out, like, a lot of stuff, I mean, like, if I'm cooking for a massive amount of people, to be honest with you, it's on the individual to find out what they like. And when I start throwing out what I like, people will write this stuff down and they'll go out and get it. And what I want them to do is go to the grocery store and say to the manager or somebody there and say, I want to try this olive oil. And normally they'll look at you strange, but it's like, listen, you wouldn't buy a car without driving it first. You wouldn't even buy shoes without trying them on first. Why on earth would you buy food without knowing what it tastes like?
Yeah, good point.
And what we discussed last night, I see people still at coffee shops, you know, sucking down frappa mocha, chocolate latte, extra foamy, whatever that stuff is. And I'll tell you, in the summertime, that stuff's like $4.15. But people balk. They freak out when I say, why don't you spend a little bit more on some really good vinegar? Why don't you spend a little bit more than that on some really good olive oil, which had to be pressed, bottled, and then shipped across not only the ocean, but all the way across to here to California. And you're nervous or concerned about spending $7, $8, even $12 because it's going to last you a long time. And that's where true health comes into play. I'm not going to eat anything that I don't like by itself. That's why I don't use canola oil. I don't like the flavor of canola oil.
When you do fry, what type of oil do you favor?
Grapeseed. Grapeseed oil is as good for your heart as olive oil is, but it's a really high temperature oil. It doesn't break down. like olive oil would once you start getting above, you know, 375, 400 degrees. Because when you're in Italy, they deep fat fry in olive oil.
Yeah, that's right.
I think because of marketing here in this country, people want what's best, and that's fine. But because businesses are out there to make money, and don't get me wrong, like, I want to make money just as much as the next guy, you know, but I'm going to do it the right way. I'm going to do it my way. You know, there are companies out there where you see commercials saying it's heart healthy or it's high in omega fat or whatever. I'm just like, eat food, brother. It's so simple. It just makes me want to smash my head against a wall, Phil. You know, but again, going back to the original thing, and when I go out and I speak to people, people are products of their environment. They're creatures of habit. And what I will say is, if you normally go, you know, watching TV, just change that habit. But change can be tremendous, and I understand that. You know, I've lived in places where it's very difficult to get fresh produce, but when stuff is in season and it's there, you go there and you get that stuff. Because when you get the best, freshest seasonal ingredients, there's very little that you have to do to that stuff. Fresh tomato, mozzarella, corn basil, oregano, Italian parsley, salt and pepper, oregano, boom, and you're done. There's a big salad. It's very filling. You didn't even have to get out a saute pan, for goodness sake.
I'm going to assume that you saw Food, Inc., the movie Food, Inc. What was your opinion of that movie? Do you think it did a good job of delivering the right message, or was there too much browbeating?
Well, the thing is, I think it delivered a great message, personally. I just want to open up people's eyes to the fact that the government actually works for the people. People forget that. For some reason, Americans think that, you know, that we work for the government, but it's not true. You know, if you want change to happen, you vote. If you don't vote, well, then you don't really get to kick and scream now, do you? So you vote, and you vote for people that represent your personal interest. And if they're not there doing so, you get them out. You vote them out. It's kind of like grocery stores that I was talking about earlier. When I go into a grocery store and I want to taste something, I taste it. Because you know what? If we don't shop at grocery stores, they go out of business. End of story. Grocery stores work for us. We don't work for them. They work for us. Without us, there is no grocery store. You know, and so when I start telling people, you actually have the power, not just over your own body and over your own family, you have the power to make a difference. If you're not happy with what kids are eating in schools today, do something about it. Don't just expect government to do something about it. You tell government what to do because government works for you. And that's what part of that particular movie, Fooding, was all about, just saying people that are in charge of regulating these things work for these massive conglomerate companies. So it's not actually in the health of our country's best interest to keep these people in power. And if you watch the movie and you agree or disagree with that, at least you have the knowledge, at least you have a certain amount of education to make an educated decision. Because there's something about just people walking around as if they're helpless and as if they're defenseless. And if that's the end all, then I kind of feel sorry for us as a nation. We are a powerful nation. We're amazing, amazing people. And I will embrace and kiss America smack dab on the lips every day. But I also have to say, listen, you are what you eat. There's no reason to allow your body to fall apart and get diabetes and high blood pressure and heart disease and, you know, high cholesterol. How about this? How about you just eat well? And then that's preventative medicine. Instead of saying, cut my stomach open and take out half my stomach because I can't control what I eat.
Yeah, there was this scene in Super Size Me a few years ago when this couple, this overweight couple, were in the hospital. The man was going to have a stomach stapling procedure because he was drinking over a gallon and a half of Coke a day. And so he's going in to have this procedure, and he has it done, and they showed it. And so he could get back to living the life, you know, that he wanted to live and continue to live in that way instead of dieting and changing his habits.
Well, I mean, there is something to be said for that. Some people, I think it's about 2 out of 100 people who are obese, have a genetic predisposition.
Yeah, Nathan, this was no genetic predisposition. This guy drank a gallon and a half of Coke a day. The fact of the matter is, if he stopped drinking that stuff and living his life right, he'd have been fine.
No, he certainly would be fine, because when you see shows like, you know, what is it, The Biggest Loser and things like that, you know, again, I don't really enjoy watching that show when they go into the kitchen and they're like, eat this, you know, 100-calorie snack pack. And that's diet food. I'm like, that's not even food.
How about you just eat an apple? That's 70 calories, and it'll fill you up more than that thing. But the reason why I do applaud shows like that, to be honest with you, Phil, is because it shows people who are what we think of beyond the brink of help, go there, put a little bit of effort forth, and they lose more than my entire body weight. They lose like 170 pounds, some of these guys. And I can't even imagine what it's like to carry around that much weight. But they can do it, and that is like almost the American spirit, being like, you can do it. You're not a victim. You actually have control over what you do, and just change your habit. And so with my TV shows, I'm like, this is an option. You're all grown-ass people. You do what you want. But the, where I kind of get a little upset, and I'm going to change my tone here now. Do you like that?
I do like that.
Tone here now. It's like, when it comes to kids, kids are not adults. And we, the adults, are responsible for our kids' health. And we as a nation are failing miserably at that. Miserably.
Do you think we'll see reform with school lunches, the school lunch program? Do you think parents will start taking more responsibility and packing lunches for their kids? Do you think we'll see more of that further on down the pike?
Well, I think it's changing a little bit, because I remember a couple of years ago, certain school districts saying we're taking out soda machines from our schools. So it's not always there for kids to just suck down, you know, different soft drinks. So it's a little bit of a time where people are doing that. But parenting skills come into play as well. I've spoken to a great number of parents about getting their kids more involved, you know, in the kitchen. And I'll say, well, then get out of their way. You know, stop telling them just to go out while you cook dinner. Allow them to become involved in that. You know, I have a niece from one of my brothers and a nephew from another brother. And when I go to visit them, they know that their Uncle Nathan's taking them to the farmer's market. They know it. They know it like the sun is coming.
You're a good uncle.
Thanks, brother. And what I say to them is, when we get to the farmer's market, you only get to choose three things. I don't get to say, you have to choose three things or you're grounded until you're 15. I say, you only get to choose three things. And if you want four things, well, you know what? You have to make a good argument about why we should get that fourth thing. But I want you to go around, taste everything, and let me know what you want. And when we get home, we get to cook with your stuff. And there's something about empowering these kids, and every time I come into town, they're like, let's roll, man. Let's do the farmer's market, because that is part of their upbringing. That's part of their community.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, but it's really easy to throw your kids in front of the TV and say, here's your thing. Now, don't get me wrong, Phil. I don't have kids. I don't have a mortgage, and I understand I have more time than most people. But, you know, when I was chefing all the time and also working at farmer's markets, I was working well over 100 hours a week for a number of years. And that was it. My sleeping patterns were probably between 1 a.m., if not 1:30 a.m., and probably 5 a.m., except for my one half of one day off, where I slept until well past noon. That's for a long time, so I understand what it means to have no time. If I said to an average listener out there, you know, who thinks they have no time, what's your favorite TV show? If their mouth opens to anything, what their favorite TV show is, then the answer is stop watching TV. Now you've made the decision to put television in front of the health of yourself and or your family. That is a choice. You're a grown-ass person. I'm not going to tell you to change. People have to kind of look realistically at what their lifestyle is. If you watch sports all weekend long, you decide not to take your kids out, get involved in community sports, that is a choice. Again, I'm not judging. I'm just saying that's a very interesting choice to make, given that parents are concerned about their children's health. And so, you know, is there change occurring? It is occurring, but it's occurring very, very slowly. And I think it'll occur faster with every single month or every single year, given the health of this country, definitely with health reform that's in the forefront right now. Because even healthy people are paying out the nose for insurance. And that just shouldn't be the case, because if the people are very, very unhealthy, they're kind of weighing down the system. And that, you know, that's got to change. There's a breaking point. And when we get to that breaking point, kind of like my friends who are in AA, when they hit rock bottom, that is when change occurs.
Listen, I'm going to switch gears on you here.
Yes, sir.
My listeners would kill me if I didn't ask this. So what was it like behind the scenes during the Next Food Network star?
Brother, that was a tough show. There was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. A lot of it being just like there were certain things that they had us do that never even made it to television. A lot of challenges. But I will say this, you know, we were on the camera from probably an average of 7:30 to 8 o'clock in the morning till sometimes midnight.
Ouch.
And never knew what was going to happen. So it was a very, very stressful, television show to participate in. But again, in hindsight, they got me the exposure that I wanted to have. And when I was on that particular show, I pitched an idea with Alton Brown on that particular episode called From the Market to Your Table, the incarnate of what A Lion in the Kitchen ended up being on Discovery Health and Fit TV. Because that's what I know best, and that's what I believe in.
And they turned that down.
Well, when I went to pitch that idea, I lost the competition, so therefore I didn't get my own show on Food Network. But I did continue pitching ideas to them, all of which surround, you know, seasonal cuisine, which is what the rest of the world does. Like in this country, if you look at my food, and I'll take a piece of fish, and I'll be like, here's lemon zest and fresh thyme, salt and pepper, and we're going to serve this with, who knows, like a roast truffle white bean puree or whatever it may be. We just use truffle oil. It's not that big of a deal. You know, and some sauteed whatever it may be. America looks at that, and they're like, that's healthy food. Like, that's really, really healthy food. But the rest of the world is like, that's dinner. It's not healthy food. That's just called food.
Yeah.
So the way that our grandparents ate, they always ate local, and they ate sustainable, and they ate organic, and they ate seasonal, which is right now the most popular thing going on right now in the United States. So our grandparents were locavores, and they were eating organic, you know, and they were eating sustainable, and they didn't even know it. They didn't even know how cool they were in their time growing up. The behind-the-scenes thing on Food Network Star, you know, other than us trying to sleep as much as possible in the green room where they kept us the majority of the time, it was just really stressful because we would try to figure out what was occurring next, and we never figured it out.
Yeah, and you're under pressure the whole time.
We were under a lot of pressure because we would just be in there, you know, and all of a sudden they would open the door and pull out two of us. Like, I have no idea what's going on. And then they would, you know, pull me out and put me in my own room for 4 hours with nothing. No, they wouldn't say anything. And then they'd take me out of that room. And it put me in a different room. It's just like...
It sounds like terrorism.
Well, you know, you signed up for it, brother. The idea, when I went in, of having a show where I could share, you know, my different degrees of health science. I did cadaver lab. I completed a course here at UCI Extension to become an emergency medical technician. So it's like, I get the body. I get the way it works. I like a certain amount of exercise because I feel better. I deal with stress more. You know, I sleep better. There's so many different... positives that come out of all this stuff, and it's not until you hit rock bottom that you realize how much your body actually misses it. And so, you know, when people make the commitment, as some of the emails that I receive all the time from people that watch the show, they're like, me and my sister, you know, are 100 pounds overweight, and we're both deciding to go on this particular diet. What do you suggest? And I let them know, and I spend about 2 hours a day, Phil, on emails. Which is a lot of time, given I'm trying to finish my cookbook, but I can't just let them sit there. I want to give them my two cents, because once you get that information, once you're empowered with information, you now have the power to change. And people want to change, they just don't have the information. And it's my responsibility as what you may call a television personality to give them that information. And, you know, and if it's one by one, person by person, from the inside out, that is where true change occurs, because I don't believe in diets, because a diet is not sustainable. I've never been approached by somebody who's smiling saying, yay, I get to go on a diet, because dieting to me is about keeping yourself from certain things. And once you're done with that diet, then you go back to your old ways. What I want you to do is eat seasonally, which is sustainable, and it's for the rest of your life. So when you eat healthy seasonal produce and it's sustainable, then that is your new habit. And that is a good habit to keep for the rest of your life.
You know, it's cool that you respond to those letters those women sent you. One of the things I respected about Bobby Flay was, and I don't know if he still does it now, because obviously he's a lot busier now than he was then, but years ago, he'd be like 300 emails a week on his website, and he'd reply to each one of them individually. And I thought that was really cool. Here's a guy who's got a lot of restaurants, multiple shows on the Food Network. He's got a lot going on and still has time to email his fans and to give back. And I thought it was very cool of him. And it's cool of you.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, Bobby and I, whenever I go back to New York, I go up to Food Network and I say hi to everybody. And Bobby's one of the people I say hi to. And he's just a regular dude. You know, he was a street kid. He was like a street rat on the streets of New York. When you grow up in the streets of New York as a redhead, you got to be kind of tough. And Bobby is exactly who he is on his TV show as he is behind the scenes. Like, he's just a regular dude.
Yeah, and he's got a pretty good jump shot from what I hear.
He's pretty...
I don't know. I've never played ball with him, but I'm sure he's got to be pretty good. He's from New York.
So you're working on a cookbook. What's your cookbook going to focus on?
It's going to focus on you know, what I know best, which is I'm going to break it down into seasons so that it makes it a little bit easier for the home cook to know what to buy. A great deal of the book and the beginning portions are about, you know, if you're on the cusp of thinking about buying a new knife or a knife set and pots and pans and spices. And it's just a lot of advice that I've learned, not just from Le Cordon Bleu, but also from chefs that I've worked with, and also from farmers. And it's just like, it's going to be a lot of information. And it's just, it's about empowering people. Because once they know how to properly cook something or how to properly pick something, or definitely how to properly store something, like there's a reason why my strawberries last over 2 weeks and most people's last a day and a half or 2 days. And that I learned from a farmer. You know, it's just going to be kind of fun. I'm writing it. I'm having a good time doing it. And to be honest with you, I haven't had cable for over 2 years because of that very reason. Like, I want to finish this book, not just for myself, but also for America, because I think there's a deep passion and need for it. There's a lot of books out there, and mine just kind of keeps it real, which is why, again, you haven't seen me on a commercial pushing certain items, because most items out there are already processed. I'm like, you don't have to spend a lot of money to eat healthy.
Dude, you're pretty dedicated. Did you stop watching television so you could finish your book?
I stopped watching everything to finish my book, because I'm like a three-year-old, Phil. Throw me in front of a TV, and I just drool, and I just sit there, and I point, and I laugh, and giggle, and I'm pointing at commercials. So when I go to a friend's house, and they have, you know, sports on, I'll just sit there and be totally, I'm like a stone man sitting there in the sofa, because there's so much going on in television. But the thing about television, to a certain extent, except for educational programs, is that I'm watching someone else live their life, but I'm doing nothing. I'm just sitting there, not living mine. And you know, there's certain programming that I like to watch at friends' houses, because, again, I don't have cable, I don't have TiVo, I don't have any of that stuff. But if I really want to watch something, I'll ask a friend to record it for me, and then I'll just go over there for the specific purpose of watching that. You know, places that I will probably never be able to afford to go, and experiences that I'll ever have. But when I sit there, you know, and see people watching television with laugh tracks, I'm like, you shouldn't be told when to laugh. It should just be funny.
You're the second chef now in the last 6 months that has told me that you don't have a television. And I find it amazing that you are that dedicated to your craft.
Well, the thing is, thank you very much. But it's like, there's got to be something I can learn today. There has to be something I can learn today. Because I just believe this is my one time around. Like, I don't know if there's anything after this life that I'm speaking about. So it's like, I got to make the best of it. This is the only body that I get. And I'm going to try to keep it as healthy as possible. It's preventative medicine. I'm doing my best to do a little bit of exercise, to eat the best way that I can. You know, I try to eat organic when it comes to any sort of animal product. You know, so it's like milk and meat is pretty much what I buy organic. Everything else, I just go to the farmer's market. And you can even buy meat and cheese and even oysters, whatever you want, at the farmer's markets here in L.A. And when I lived in New York, you know, last winter for about 8 months, there's a lot going on there, too. So there's this massive movement of farming and people coming up and really people paying attention to where their food comes from. Because I just don't think that, I think that it's making people mad. Again, I use the word mad rarely in my life, but people get mad. When they're sick, they get mad. And when people feel like they're being duped, they get mad also. And they start looking out for the health of their family. And that hasn't happened in a very long time. You know, because it's like, I can compete with fast food, meaning, you know, a burger is a buck. But that's not even a burger. It's mostly just filling stuff. But I can get you a big bag of barley for $1.69 with homemade stock, which costs me nothing because I already got stuff in my fridge.
Hey Nathan, you bring the barley, I'll bring the hops. We'll be in business, buddy.
That, my friend, is a different show. You know, but that also, I mean, just talking about beer, that's Americana. You know, beer is being celebrated more than ever before just because beer is the American thing. Homemade sausages, like hot dogs and baseball, it's all being celebrated because, you know, there's a lot going on in the world today that people aren't really celebrating because it can't be celebrated. There's a lot of torment going on today. And the thing about cooking, which is the biggest responsibility that I've ever had in my entire life with all the different jobs I've had, I mean, food is community. I don't care what religion you are, what race or creed, sexuality that you are. Whatever you celebrate, you have food. It could be Christmas, it could be Hanukkah, it could be whatever. You have food. And food is like the foundation of the world.
Nobody can be offended by food like they can by religion or race or whatever it may be. And so food is the common denominator to community. And what makes me sad is when I see the amount of people that are standing in line or in their cars in line at fast food joints, I've timed it literally with my watch. And sometimes it takes as much as 18 to 22 minutes for people to first pull up and then slowly pull up with their order and slowly go around and finally get their food. That's 22 minutes. I'm like, in 22 minutes, I can cook you a three-course meal, brother.
Yeah, it's true. You know, the people who say, let's go get something. We don't have time to cook. By the time you go and order and come back, you know, I could have cooked you something by then.
Well, that's absolutely true. But if you go even one step further, and all the kids today that are mostly being fed, you know, fast food or processed food, there's no memories. And the sense of smell is, your olfactory system, is the number one precursor for memory. And I would hate to think that 30 years down the road, people, our kids, are talking to their kids. And they're like, you know, Dad, what was your grandmother cooking? Or what was your memory from your childhood? And a lot of kids will be like, the number four with a large Coke. That, man, my mom, when she would give me the number four, I'll tell you, that was love.
Well, I'll tell you this. I can smell a double-double from a mile away.
Kid, like, it's nobody's business. And I'm not against that, just because people like In-N-Out, you know, there's certain burger places that are out there that never use frozen. They make their fries right there. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's not like to say that I won't eat ice cream or chocolate or, you know, suck down wine or pork or anything like that, because that's real food. But if I eat something and it's just kind of boring to me, the thing about, you know, like a burger on boring white bread and the processed this, it's kind of a one-trick pony, because the first bite tastes exactly the same as the last bite. And so, you know, one of the things I love about filming stuff and doing television is actually not just the TV itself, it's meeting people behind the scenes, like the camera guys and the sound guys. Because after I'm done cooking and talking about stuff, they'll approach me and say, what was that thing that you said about, you know, the olive oil with the rosemary and the garlic? And then I'll have this massive powwow of people sitting around talking about that. And they'll go home and they'll start to cook for their family. And they'll start going to farmers markets. You know, Real Simple Real Life on TLC, my cameraman, one of the guys that was there, I see him all the time with his family, you know, at the Hollywood Farmers Market. And there's something really great about that, because that is my community. Like, that's my church.
Yeah, it's true. People don't realize how simple food is and how much of a gift it is to us that Mother Nature has provided this bounty of food and flavors. And all we have to do is accept it and do very little to it to get the flavors out of it. But people tend to take that for granted.
Well, I mean, I completely agree with you. I mean, more on that point, the camera guy, his name is Carl from Growing a Greener World. He's in North Carolina. They just got snow again. And he sent me a text. He was like, what about that chicken pie art? You know, and I sent this massive text. I've never seen my fingers and thumbs fly so quickly across my phone. You know, it's like you pound the chicken between two pieces of plastic wrap, you know, chop some rosemary, garlic, salt and pepper, olive oil, that sort of thing. You sear that, and while that's happening, a pan, small thing of tomatoes, you know, onions, garlic, capers, black olives, and put that over angel hair pasta with torn basil and parsley with Parmigiano Reggiano. And the thing is, you know, people will go to places that are all you can eat with endless buckets of salad bars, which isn't really salad, you know, and an endless supply of breadsticks, which is just ridiculous.
Ugh.
All you can eat, you should run from places and say all you can eat, because it's the smaller portions that you should want to eat. And that's also becoming very popular now today in America, which is great. Because if you serve somebody a bowl of soup, for example, okay, and they'll just keep eating the soup until it's done. And so if you have a small tube of soup constantly refilling their bowl of soup, they'll just keep eating it. They will literally keep eating it.
We're eating ourselves to death.
It's insane. So psychologically, we're accustomed to eating everything that's in front of us. Not like the clean plate club when we were kids. It's like, you know, you give them a small appetizer, which actually has some body to it, because there's something about eating real food which is satiating to me. It's real food. And it's like, if I have this chicken with a little bit of red pepper flake, and here's an olive, and here's a caper, and then here's the basil and lemon zest, every single bite is slightly different. It's not like just being like, here is your 50-pound thing of frozen lasagna, eat this. You know, if you give me a big slice, chances are I'm going to try to eat it. I'll try. But if you give me a small piece, then there's enough room for other things. And after a while, you're like, you know what, I don't even have to eat the rest of it.
Man, Nathan, you have got the passion, man. You are the perfect guest for this show. I wish I'd met you earlier. Why didn't I meet Bogner earlier?
It's funny, because I'm speaking
asking you, I'm pacing in my apartment right now here in Hollywood. It's just, I'm looking around trying to grab something. I'm grabbing olive oil. I'll grab this sweet potato. I'm grabbing this bag of onions just because there's something so visceral about touching my food. And like when you watch my show, you know, A Lion in the Kitchen, when I make salads, when I make anything, I'll plate with my hands. You know, I'll mix stuff with my hands because it's food. You shouldn't be afraid of it. And, you know, and it's like, for example, I have one knife that I use 95% of the time, and it cost me $38. I mean, I have $200 knives, but I never use them. I have a knife. I have a saute pan. I have a really crappy oven that's off by as many as 75 degrees. And in my cookbook, I will have a photo of my real kitchen, not my studio kitchen, but my real kitchen. And I put out some top-notch food from this tiny galley kitchen.
Man, that's awesome.
You don't have to have fancy stuff. My oven, my landlord years ago was like, go to Sears, go to the back of the rack, and whatever's on sale. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I can boil water barely because the flame isn't that big. It's just not that great of a flame. There's certain things that I teach people in the book. It's like, listen, if you have a kitchen like mine, go get an old-school grandma thermometer that stays in your oven. Because when I turn my oven on, I don't know what the actual temperature is. And it's been off by as many as 75 degrees.
Man, your place sounds kind of like the place I had a year and a half ago. It was like, that kitchen, it was like camping.
it's like Sterno. Or I would borrow a cigarette lighter from my neighbor and be like, here's a swizzle stick.
Oh, yeah, a couple times I was ready to grab the Coleman stove and just cook with that.
That wouldn't be that bad. No, there's something about realizing what my passion was. And I didn't know that before. You know, I went to school for a bunch of different things. I've worked in nursing homes. You know, I've done landscaping. I've done ambulance stuff. I've done a lot of stuff. I really searched long and hard for all these things. But, you know, I was a dishwasher when I was 15, and then I was a waiter for probably 14 years. It's just, I love food. I couldn't get away from it. I tried, but I couldn't. It pulled me back in. And the reason why I went to culinary school is just because I wanted to be so intimate with the knowledge of food and how to prepare it the best way possible. And what I learned while I was attending the Le Cordon Bleu Associate is that all you need to know is just method. It's all about method. So if you can roast a chicken, you can roast vegetables, you can roast anything. You know, if you can make a stew with any vegetables, it's all the same cooking methods. You just apply the same thing to all the different types of foods that you have. It's just technique. And I could teach you that stuff in 2 months if you wanted to come here every day for a couple hours a day. And you could do anything you wanted to do. And that's why I don't really go out to eat very much, is because I can invite you and your wife over and my other friends and be like, I'm going to get a whole salmon, like a whole salmon for pennies on the dollar. And we're going to, you know, get a couple bottles of wine, and we're going to make some amazing stuff with roasted vegetables, and, you know, and salmon. And I'm going to take all these vegetables and throw them inside a small little chamber and blend it all up. And there's this fresh dill pesto. And you don't really have to do anything. You just throw it all in there. And I know I'm making it sound easier than it is, but to be honest with you, Phil, it is that easy. You just have to have the knowledge. And that's what I'm trying to convey on TV and also in my cookbook.
Hey, listen, that sounds great, man. What time should we be over?
Please come over, my God. And I know you're further south from me, but please, you'd fight a lot of traffic. But man, come over. I got a whole branch of Brussels sprouts I'm going to roast, you know, balsamic vinegar, salt and pepper, olive oil, some shallots, and some toasted pecans. That's a little side. We could do some poached fish and olive oil. It's just, it's all passive stuff. What I like to do is just throw it all in the oven and let it cook. And then you and I can just hang out and drink wine. It's just so simple. You know, you would never... If you work in an office, you would never say, I have a big meeting next week. I'm going to put it off until Monday. What you do is you plan ahead. And that's one of the things I do. I'll be like, well, what's in season? I'm going to plan ahead. It's so simple. It's the exact same thing that people already do. You just need to apply it to food, to your actual home life. And people put that stuff off until they're on the way home from work. And chances are, you know, I got this from my mom, the ability to just make something out of nothing. We would go home and be like, there's nothing here. We turn around, and my mom would make amazing stuff. It was just, how did she do that? And it's just method. You know, a couple cans of tomatoes, some pasta, you know, some beans. It's like, if I have beans, already I can make a rosemary white bean puree. And that's super simple, because all I have to do is dump that stuff in a blender and blend it up. End of story. Like, when you go to the back of the rack when it comes to restaurants, and you work in the back, and you make these amazing elegant soups and these amazing sides, it's not any special things that we have. We don't have special access to any special stuff, because when you go to farmers markets, you will see the chefs there. That's why I go there. You know, we have the same majority of my pots and pans are all beaten up like they are in restaurants because I don't have high-end pots and pans. I have aluminum pots and pans that I bought for $21 each at a restaurant supply shop that any old person can go to. That's what I cook with because that's what chefs in restaurants all across America cook with. We don't have super shiny, super expensive $1,200 packs of pots and pans because it's just completely unnecessary. It's unnecessary.
Nathan, thank you, man. This has been amazing.
And I've only gotten started.
Wait, there's more?
Phil, there's a reason why I bring my cappuccino machine as my carry-on. So when you see me, cruising across LAX or anywhere across the country, you see me rolling around with a little container. That is my cappuccino machine. That stuff down enough to kill a small mouse, for God's sake.
Listen, when you're ready to promote the cookbook, or as the premiere of Growing a Greener World comes closer, maybe we'll have you back on, yeah?
That'd be awesome. And for your, for your listeners out there, if they have any questions, I'm more than happy to take care of them. My website is chefnathanlyon.com. You send me a message. There's no Team Lyon. It's not like when you get a TV show, you just get a bunch of people working for you. It's me, in my apartment, drinking tea or lattes, answering people's questions. And I'm honored to be that person to help out. Whatever I can do to help.
Cool, man. And I'll actually include a link to your website as well. He's Nathan Lyon, host of A Lyon in the Kitchen, currently on Fit TV. His new show, Growing a Greener World, debuts May 18th on PBS. Check your local listings. Thanks, Nathan.
I love you, brother. Thanks, Phil.
What are some of the examples of dangerous things going on in food production that a lot of folks aren't aware of?
Well, when I was a kid, when we had a hamburger, it was made from one cow. Today, there might be 5,000, 10,000 cows in one single hamburger. So ultimately, if you have one bad cow...
So the meat comes from all different places?
All places. And it could be from animals from all over the world that go into one hamburger. And it could be 100,000 hamburgers could contain that one bad cow. So ultimately, I think there's always been bad food. But with all the science we have, we're no less vulnerable today. And perhaps we're more vulnerable today than we've ever been.
I want to play another clip from your film. Take a look.
Birds are now raised and slaughtered in half the time they were 50 years ago, but now they're twice as big. People like to eat white meat, so they redesigned the chicken to have large breasts.
It's incredible that we basically engineered food like this. It's certainly strange, it's disturbing, but I mean, is it really unhealthy?
Well, on one level, we're paying less for food than at any time in history, which is a great thing. The problem is there are high unseen costs to this low-cost food, and we're just beginning to understand them. As the report today, $150 billion a year are going towards foodborne illness.
You look at the unsanitary conditions which sometimes these animals are kept in, and in clips from your film, I mean, there are cows up to their knees in feces, there's chickens who are, are raised really with literally no room to move at all. If 76 million people a year are getting sick from foodborne illnesses, who's protecting consumers?
Well, the problem is that we have industry that says they think they can do it better than government. In our film, we have a story of a boy that ate a hamburger and died from E. coli, and that the meat that had the E. coli sat on the shelves for 16 days after he died because the government did not have the right to recall that. So unfortunately, we need stronger and tougher regulations.
And the idea that there are all these farmers out there and, you go to the supermarket and you see silos and you see, fields of green and stuff and ads. The truth is these are huge industrial corporations and just a few of them control like 80% or a huge amount of the food, right?
Yeah, I think there are four meat companies that control 80% of all the beef in this country, which is a shock. It used to be they controlled a fraction of that. And we have fewer and fewer companies that are now controlling our food. And unfortunately, they have a lot too much power. I think at this point, we have food products have gained more control than we as consumers have, and the balance is off.
What can consumers do, though? Because, a lot of people say, eat organic or go buy local food, but all that stuff costs a lot more. What are people, who are concerned about the food they're eating but can't afford, free-range organic products?
as we become more conscious, hopefully we'll make better decisions and buy less processed food, buy more local food, eat less meat. Ultimately, we're eating too much meat and the earth can't take it. But I think we just have to become more conscious. But we also have to work with government, because right now we're subsidizing food that's making us sick. We're subsidizing corn. We're subsidizing soybeans. And that goes into 90% of the items in the supermarket are made up of those two ingredients. We're paying for those with our tax dollar.
Okay, so last weekend we were headed to Jonathan Gold's Gold Standard event, the food event in Los Angeles. And Bobby had mentioned that when we go, I should look for his brother Nick Bogner. He runs operations at Border Grill. He said they were going to be there, and Border Grill is this Mexican restaurant in Santa Monica. It's owned by Chef Susan Feniger from the Two Hot Tamales. You remember them on Food Network years ago? So I go there, and I meet Bobby's brother, and dude, he sounds just like Bobby. It's amazing. He doesn't look like him a whole lot, but they talk almost identically. People used to say that about me and my brother, that we sounded alike. I think it's kind of common. He's a super nice guy. Hands me this incredible bite of food. It's a slice of avocado, fresh California avocado, that had been rolled in quinoa and other small seeds and then pan-fried. And it was topped with a corn and pickled beet relish. Phenomenal bite of food. Really flavorful. I'll be damned if it wasn't a vegetarian option. You know, damn you vegetarian, making delicious food. Anyway, so he hands me the slip of paper, explains that they're trying to get their food truck on a list of food trucks approved to sell their food at LAX. And I think we talked about this late last year. Food trucks are going to be a big thing this year. And when you think of food trucks, you probably think of like these nasty old roach coaches or taco trucks. Well, it's far beyond that now. Koji Barbecue, or is it Kogi Barbecue? I don't know. Pretty much set the standard. And now everybody has a truck. And we're talking about gourmet food out of a truck, okay, where they come to you instead of you going to them. I love the idea because the food is really good. A lot of these trucks are making great stuff. What I like about Border Grill being there is that it's healthy. Not to say that the others are unhealthy, okay, but when you think of Mexican food, you think of lard and refried beans and cheese and tortillas, pretty heavy stuff. Border Grill is new Mexican cuisine, more Southwest cooking than anything. They use fresh ingredients, really authentic dishes from Oaxaca and the Yucatan. Awesome stuff. And Susan Feniger is going to be competing on season 2 of Top Chef Masters, too. I just found that out. Anyway, if you live in Southern California, do me a big favor. Visit bordergrill.com/LAX and fill out this petition form. Let LAX know that you'd like to see a healthy, delicious alternative to the average everyday gut wagon. All right? They'll approve a select number of trucks to sell food there. And Border Grill, I think they should definitely be considered to be on that list. Trust me, the food was great. And if you live in Southern California and get a chance to visit Border Grill or see their truck, check them out, man. They're awesome. All right, listen, I'm sorry for the length of the show. It's like a party that I don't want to end, but I know I've got to because it's getting really late. Unreal interview with Nathan Lyon. Don't forget to check out his website, chefnathanlyon.com. See episodes of A Lion in the Kitchen. They're currently showing on Fit TV and Discovery Health. And don't forget to pencil in his new show, Growing a Greener World, on PBS this May. Maybe we'll have him back on as the show, the debut of the show draws close. And we'll talk to him again. Thanks to CNN for the audio. Music in the episode from Spine Shank. All right, if you like the song we're playing, you can download it from the iTunes store. Visit the site mylifeasafoodie.com. We'll have a direct link to buy the song. Or you can visit their official MySpace page, myspace.com/spineshank. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and we'll see you next time. Live well, everybody. Now I can take this. Everything I know, realize that I'm nothing I wanted to be. I can never change anything I've done because it's the
comes a new disease. But it still becomes a new disease.